accept. Yeah.
Hello, welcome to the Honest Wargamer Stat Center. That's right, welcome to the show, the Age of Sigmar Stat Center. I'm your host, Rob, and I have two co-hosts today. Owen, the Owen Jackson as usual, F5. And then my low five today, we're joined by special guest, Mr. Sam Morgan. Hey, Sam, how are you?
Hey, man, doing really well. G'day, Rob. Hey, Owen.
Hey.
Owen, are you well?
I'm all right, man. I'm just happy because I'm so exhausted from the weekend that we get to share the load a little bit. But I think from talking to Sam, Sam's just as knackered as us. So we're gonna muddle through. We might come up with some interesting points. But overall, I'm good, man. Nice to be here.
I actually think that the biggest data takeaway that we've got from the weekend is we all need to level up our like 2-day stamina. Because we've been doing some cheeky one-dayers, and they're a breeze, aren't they, really? You really do have to pump up that 2-day stamina, so that's fun. Right, well, so we got an exciting day today. Obviously, we're going to be talking about the Hammer Time 7 event and the results from that, but we also have an event that Sam attended over the weekend, so Sam's here to talk about that, so thank you. Summer Smash, is that right? That's the name?
Yep, Summer Smash down in Geelong, just about an hour and a bit out of Melbourne, so... lovely to spend 2 days in the Australian summer in a shed with low tables to fuck your back. It was perfect.
I do love a good low table as a 6'2" fella. It's perfect. Yeah. Well, very much looking forward to this. I hope everyone who's joined us live is well. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, which is super cool. Some of the other stuff to announce really quick is next week we might actually have, I don't want to shock anyone, data. I think a big shout out to Armand Ziggy and Joe Cryer specifically. Also, big shout out to Jared Coots, people who have been filling in their data sheets. And so we might actually have some actual numbers on the screen next week. Not this week, but that's next week. That's fun. We're going to do a great job today regardless. We've got some great talking points, I'm looking forward to. Shall we start off with Sam and the Summer Smash event, right? Can you give us some info about the event?
I would love to. I just want to quickly add, I'm playing in a TTS event at the moment. And I had my game last week against Tomb King Tristan, and I can see that he's in the chat today. So big shout out to Tomb King Tristan. Awesome game. He demolished me. So that's as far as we'll go.
With the Tomb Kings.
Yeah, Cetra is teleporting around, and the buff that Cetra's giving off is like the size of the whole table, and the skeletons had about 7 attacks each, and he just rinsed me. I looked at his army and I was like, oh, they'll be like zombies. So I just chuck like a random character in here or this in there, and the buff's all stacked, and he gave me a good lesson in Legend. So that was heaps of fun.
Wow. I do like that. I do like that when the Canadians have to fly over to Canada to get the real jank. Yeah, that's that works for me. So you were down in Geelong, right?
Down in Geelong, Summer Smash. So a 50-player event. Our first 2-dayer we've had in Victoria since Summer Smash last year, which was the sort of first week of February then. So it's been a full year between events. Which obviously you guys probably still got a little bit longer to go, but it was certainly worth the wait. It was just awesome to see everyone again, and there's something I've been enjoying TTS, and I've been enjoying playing club games. There's something to be said for lots of different groups coming together and coalescing, and being able to spend time with everyone. So it was awesome. And the event, I think, do you want to start with the results, or do you want to hear about my shitty run?
I'd like to hear about your shitty run before we get into the results, truthfully.
So I was running Mixed Death. This is an army that I've been writing heaps of lists for a long time, and playing stacks and stacks of games with the Death Riders Battalion. So probably up to about, I don't know, 45 games with the Death Riders. So with that in mind, I submitted an army with 30 Blade Geists and no Hex Wraiths. What happened was we hit list submission. I subbed a list where I didn't have half the models painted, promptly bought those models, gave them to my commission painter, and got them 2 days before the event. And I was running 80 chain rasps in a battalion where you bring back 2d6 chain rasps. It's really, really good. The chain guard, the shroud guard with 30 blade geists, and then a heap of support characters. And basically the trick of the list is that the blade geists can get up to 200 attacks, hitting on threes, re-rolling, and then wounding on twos. And that's what I'm trying to do every game. I'm trying to set up a situation where I get to, you know, get all of those buffs on simultaneously and see what they can chop up. And I was able to pull it off in all my games. So that was really rewarding. But unfortunately, I came afoul when I played the Seraphon. I played against the Fangs of Sotek. And they absolutely love 5-wound support characters that need to be up in my lines for my buffs to be going off. So
They arguably love coming up against anything. I know you're like, oh, my 5-wound support characters have a tough time. I reckon Archeon would have a rough time against 40 skinks with some buffs. So
I was thinking about this on the long and arduous drive back. I think just playing Nighthaunt, there could be some play in Nighthaunt where you pop up, you hit a 10-inch charge, you kill a shitload of guys before they stand and shoot. Because I think the sequencing there would be you do your attacks, then they decide if they're going to use a command point or not. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's not a particularly safe plan, is it? It's contingent on hitting 10-inch charges. Like, I'm sure there's probably some.
Yeah, when and the Seraphon players sat on the opposite side of the table with just like about 6 to 10 zero risk plays that they can do to counter your like big balls turn one, like roll that 10 play.
However,
like,
if you win that event though. Because really, yeah, if you only get drawn against Seraphon twice, you've only got to make that play twice.
Well, I did. I got them twice. So I beat them the first time, which was glorious. And then the second time, I was 5 skinks away from winning. So we were playing Better Part of Valor. And I gave him first turn. And then I tried to alpha him with my whole army playing for the double. Got the double. Charged him, was going to be able to burn his objectives. I killed just a mountain of skinks across the board. He didn't have any CP because he'd done the stand and shoot thing, but he had 5 left. So if I killed just 5 more, then I would have pulled off a miraculous victory there. But it was just to be honest, the best thing about it was seeing people and playing them over the table. Like I didn't care whether I went 0-5 or 5-0. Like I wasn't chasing a podium or anything like that. But the list was definitely strong enough that I felt like I was in all my games, which is really cool. Rob, for you, probably the highlight would be I played against Gargants round 4, and
how do you rate them as a competitive force?
I gave them first turn and then wasn't too, my opponent was a legend. He was a really cool guy and he was doing clever stuff with the kicking and whatever, but the actual army on the table wasn't that scary whatsoever. So I wound the blade guys up and they went in, and then the next turn his whole army was dead, and that's 20 blade geists. They cost me 320 points. 200 attacks, 3s to hit, re-rolling, 2s to wound, take it off.
Oh, wow. bless them. Yeah, the mega guards.
The small ones only have a 5-up save. The small ones like Midas Breeze. They're terrible.
They are indeed terrible. No matter what anyone else wants to say, they suck. But yeah, good fair play to all the Gargant players trying hard with them. I mean, when you do have, I think one of the things that's interesting about the Gargant list is when you see three megas and they throw them at you, and they're like, look, that's over 100, that's over 100 wounds, which we're throwing right in your face on a 4-up save turn 1. You're like, that's quite a bit. A lot of impact hits from the mortal wounds, and Gatebreakers could do some genuine damage. So that all gets slung at you. You're like, that's a lot to like punch through. But there's nothing else in the list. Once that's gone, or you just teleport a unit of 5 somewhere else, you're laughing. Ultimately, yep. So yeah, it's a rough one. Go on.
I'm sorry, Rob. I think one of the Gargants players went 4-1, yep. And because of the way that his army was built, and the secondary was kill points. He killed like 8,000 or 9,000 points over the weekend, so he ended up finishing 4th, which is just fair play to that dude. I think it was Corey. So shout out to Corey. That's an awesome result with what I think is probably a mid tier army at best. I think it's actually a low tier army, but at best it's a mid tier army, you know?
Yeah, so I'd say congrats to Corey playing it as opposed to the army doing it. I would say obviously there were Gargants all over the the Titans of Gur event at the weekend. Did you get any takeaways from the mega Gargants?
I think outside of the Sons of Bear Matt Allegiance, they're a lot of fun. And everyone yesterday had a wicked time, and it was really nice actually. At the end of the event, like, there was loads of really good stories and things. But if we're talking competitive, outside of I'd probably say outside of Taker Tribe, I don't know, Sam, was the guy who went for, was it Taker Tribe? Yeah, which is understandable. I think there are a couple of really, you know, good players that do well at events and that I'm in chats with, and they think that Taker Tribe does actually have some game. Just because regardless of whether the Mega Gargant's on 35 wounds or one wound, it still counts as 30 models, which is pretty strong. But it's a weird place that, isn't it? It's like get on the objectives and hold on rather than being sort of like this destructive force that you're rampaging around. It's like, you know, they're just like big scarecrows that just stand there and get battered for a few turns and then hopefully hold on and win on points. But yesterday, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. But the person who took out the event, that was more based on the supporting cast around I think an Engine of the Gods performed much, much better than a 500 point Mega Gargant. So yeah, an Engine in Thunder Lizards going twice and yeah, had a great time. I think it pretty much one-shotted I don't think it one-shotted it, but it did a lot of damage to a Mega Gargant.
More so than any other army, the Gargants are very dependent on the scenarios. So the scenarios chosen are going to dictate where they fall in the sort of the standings. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've probably got Seraphon and Ideneth who just don't care. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably really highlighted through where those armies finish. Probably across, if we have like a full tournament season, I reckon you'd see there's some events where the Gargants are really quite competitive. Maybe they've got focal points. Maybe they've got some other missions that aren't as bad for them. Whereas, yeah, you got your IDK and Seraphon just not really giving a fuck.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks to Gary P for donating 200 bits to the show. Appreciate that loads. That's lovely. Also, thanks to Nikos in the chat. Jack Felix says he doesn't agree. Thinks Gargants are A, strong A, not double A or S, but strong A. That would put them two tiers below the top, which would put them in the middle, Jack. That's your rating. That's super cool with you. And also shout out to Corey. So the actual event was 42 players. I'm right in thinking that. The Summer Smash event. I think it was
48 players. So we had 52 drops the day before. We ended up with 48. I finished middle of the pack. I finished 20th. The dude that I played, Lockie, in the last round, he went on to finish 7th. So if I'd been able to knock those skinks over a top 10, might have been on the cards, but c'est la vie. I think in the top 10, we had a couple of Fangs of Sotek. We had the Gargants list we've just been discussing. And then we had Pete Atkinson. So Plastic Crack for the people that follow the blog, which is big playing. Oh, awesome blog, playing off in the last round. So he missed out this time, but I think he's been on the top table the last two events in the final round. So it's really repping with that big wah.
Yeah, that's excellent work. So just to confirm here, Tabletop TO had a bit of a meltdown. So if we don't shout you out, apologies, because we haven't got necessarily all of it. But Joel came first, and we'll talk about his list in a minute. He's the only person to go 4-0. And then everyone in the next... 5-0, sorry. Yeah, and then everyone in the next bracket, so 2nd to 8th place, which I think also included a Trog list from memory, looking at it last night, but not being able to bring up the data today, is from 2nd all the way through to 8th, so 7 players went 4-1, which is like another good bracket to look at as well. But let's talk about that winning list. Well done to War Machine, by the way. Thank you. Well done to him for subscribing or resubscribing. So, yeah, well done. Joel Graham with a Khorne list in first place. Owen, does this set your heart on fire? What's the situation?
It does. Good for him. I mean, I have tried to build Bloodmark Warband lists because that's what he's lent into. He's got a one-drop Khorne Reapers of Vengeance list, but then it's basically all made up of Slaves to Darkness units, which if anybody's playing Chaos, anything outside of Tzeentch at the moment, I think you're leaning into the Slaves book, really, to be competitive. You see, like, Slaanesh, Lurid Haze, which has got, like, lots of Marauders and stuff, and obviously... I don't think you see it too much in Nurgle, but definitely Khorne Archeon, whilst he's not as powerful in some people's eyes as like the Tzeentch build, because you don't have Cheetah Dice and you don't have Pinks to gam up the board. You've just got lots of fragile troops and things. That Bloodmark Warband is really good because effectively he's a one drop. He's got this dominant power piece that he can push around the board. And I found through playing with the more traditional things that you find in a Khorne build, like, you know, your Bloodsecrator or your Bloodstoker, I was really surprised to not see those pieces. But Bloodmarked, effectively what that does, I've got it here. If a hero from the battalion, so it's either a Chaos Lord on foot who can fight a bit, or Archeon himself, if they kill, slay any enemy models, so you're doing it wrong. If Archeon isn't killing at least one model, then you may as well give up on Warhammer. But if he slays one model in the combat phase, you can pick a unit from the same battalion, so the whole army, wholly within 12, and they get plus one the attacks characteristic. So it's a really cute way of basically meaning that you don't need to have a Bloodsecrator in range, which is often the problem, because he's got two war shrines, so he's going to get two prayers off early doors. So he can make Archeon have like a four up against magic, which is amazing in the current meta. So he's got a re-rollable four up spell ignore from the two war shrines. Mm-hmm. Plus he can get the prayer. So he's got bronze flesh and resanguination. So I can imagine that Archeon is boosting around the board with two war shrines, giving him a six up DPR. And then they're also able to, he gets a 2d3 heal. So a heal from the heads and then a heal from the war shrine with resanguination. He's going to get him on a two up save because he gets.
He can go one up. He goes the Nurgle one, right?
Yes. Yeah, precisely. Yeah.
One up and misdirect him if he wants.
Happy days. Yeah, so you can make him, like, and that's the thing. The thing I really enjoyed, as Sam mentions there, the flex that you get with the war shrines. He hasn't got slaughter priests on foot, and they need to be wholly within 18 for the war scroll prayers from the war shrine, or wholly within 16 for the Khorne prayers. So it's a pretty nice bubble. And that wholly within 18 is also the same range for the DPR that you get. So you can basically look at your opponent, see, right, what are the threats? What's going to take me out? If it's going to be high rend, you just lean into the extra save. If it's going to be like lots of spells, like I've played against Croak quite a lot with Archeon. And when you give him a four up, because he gets a four up spell ignore on his war scroll, and then another four up with a re-rollable save from the Tzeentch prayer. So you can make him on a two up re-rollable save with a four up re-rollable spell ignore, four up against mortals that bounces them. The plus one attack gives him, and then also you know you're inherently getting reroll ones to hit because he's a Khorne demon. So the Slayer of Kings is twos rerolling ones, and the Dorgar's Claws is twos rerolling ones, and then you tend to go Nurgle prayer for plus one save reroll wounds, so he's getting full reroll. So he's like, he's the ultimate hammer and anvil. He's like the one-man army. And then the rest of the list, I like that. The chosen pick. Yeah, he's got like, effectively, what's going to happen is those marauders, he can give them fight on death, which is really nice from the by my will command ability. And then, you know, even the marauders with plus one attack, you're looking at 61 attacks, threes and fours with a rend, potentially, you know, you might have split your war shrine buffs up and buffed up to 20 marauders. And then apart from the Chaos Warriors, you're going to expect everything to die. And then it's the summoning in the late game. I think people, if you look at Archeon as like a summoning sort of beacon, so he can go off and people say like, "Oh, right, you haven't got loads of units." But Archeon is like the ultimate blood tithe generator. He can go out there, blow stuff up. Often I was finding I was getting to three blood tithe for the priority roll, and then if I lose it, I can just move them out of the way, or you can charge in something. But similarly, if you need that late game summoning, then Archeon 14-inch move, maybe you can double move him with your blood tithe, and you know, we could do a whole show on blood tithe and Archeon, to be honest with you. But he's then able to then use that blood tithe in the late game, because if you think about it, a 14-inch move and then a summon wholly within 12 is you're basically putting a unit 26 inches away from where Archeon is at the start of the movement phase, which is great for the objective play. But I'm sure there's more tech in there, but effectively,
well, one of the things I want to ask, actually, because I'm pretty certain this isn't the case, just double check. The Chaos Lord obviously is going to be allows the Slaves to Darkness unit to pile and attack again, right? But you can't use the command ability from Archeon and the Chaos Lord as well, so you can't do three activations. Or am I wrong in that?
Yeah. So what is it, Reapers of Vengeance or whatever? You can't do three pile-ins. No, it's capped at two.
It's capped at two. All
right, because both of it's like Varangard being, you know, people saying, oh, can Varangard go twice, once from the War Scroll and once from Chaos Lord? But I think it's both of them are incumbent on after this unit has attacked for the first time.
There's an FAQ that really clearly, through five different books layered together, articulates that no, he can't fight three times.
Okay, perfect. I was just checking. So then the Chaos Lord really in the list to help out the other units in the book, right? So the Chosen
and the Mortals. And to give this the magic, the whatever the artifact is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's like multiple ways. There's multiple ways in that list for the opposing wizards to blow themselves up, I think. I defer to Owen on that one. I think the skulls and the whatever the artifact are combine nicely.
Has he got Hex Gorgeous Skulls in the list?
Yeah, he's got that as well.
Okay, so he can do the cute trick, which I love. I don't know if you know about this one, Sam, but basically if you get the War Shrine to pray and throw out the skulls, then if your opponent's running a heavy magic army, let's say Lumineth or Croak or something, if your opponent's like, well, I'm wholly within 12 of both skulls, so if I do this, all my wizards are going to take D6 mortal wounds. If they then go, okay, I don't want to cast, what you've got is you've got Archeon, who you can move up, and then he will proc the skulls.
Yeah, nice.
So you can get, you've got, because he doesn't care about D6 mortal wounds because he's got a 4 up against them. So yeah, I've done it plenty of times where you just fish for that 8, you go for a Mystic Shield or an Arcane Bolt, fish for the 8, the natural 8 then blows everything up, and it's wonderful. I've done it a few. And then you're right, he's got Mage Eater for D6 mortal wounds, and if you roll a natural 8 on the Unbind, yeah, you get D6. Yeah, so there's some good, and he's got good anti-magic tech, because that's the thing with Reapers. Even though nearly everything in the list apart from Archeon isn't a demon, but Reapers allows him to pile an attack twice, as you mentioned. And then also Skull Shard Mantle is a 2-up spell ignore, and Mage Eater is an Unbind, which is with a natural 8 does D6 mortals. So he's got some super sweet anti-magic tech in there from that demon sort of sub-faction. Yeah, it's really
what
cool.
What realm was he in, Rob? Because we played in realms in a really strange way. So if he's in the realm of Ulgu, great. So he can once per game, he can teleport the Marauders. So he moves Archeon up, and then he can teleport the Marauders in front of him, because that's the Shadow Command ability. And then the Marauders obviously change their dice roll 1 to a 6. So that's really good.
It doesn't matter how good Marauders are, they still can't kill skink heroes. That's what I learned from, that's my anecdotal evidence from Saturday's game. I mean, great result for Joel. He's got to be over the moon ultimately with this, taking a Khorne list. I would say Archeon, and we talked about this a lot, Archeon's so super useful, whether it be in Khorne, Tzeentch, or Smesh, or anything, just into some of the prevalent threats out there in the game right now. Also interested on his path to victory, but because Tabletop TO's down, I'm not able to check. But I do wonder how this would fare against like some heavy shooting. Hopefully he defeated a couple of the Seraphon builds on the way, and if he didn't get the chance to, I'm sure he'd still he'd still fancy the fight. But I do wonder about his path to victory, because I'm pretty certain a couple of Salamanders do some good old work on against Archeon and bring him down.
You ignore Archeon, you just kill everything else in the army. If you've got the ability to kill the War Shrines, and then you can and work your way down the priority list, and Archeon can be the one model going around smashing stuff, but only holding one objective at a time.
Yeah, true. It's true. But yeah, like I do wonder. But like either way, congratulations to Joel. He's got to be over the moon about that. So some other results, and because again, Tabletop TO, so maybe Sam can jump in here. Change Host came in second. Then we had the Australian, I can't remember which fellow it was. Owen, I think you know, the Bringy Dingy Marathi Daughters of Cain build, which...
That's Corey, Corey Papp, I think. That's right, isn't it, Sam? Yeah,
Corey Papp build.
Yeah, so the Corey Papp build. So he came in third, or that list came in third place at least. And then there was a Trog, and there was also a 4-1 Gargant's list, and that's all I've got in that 4-1 bracket right now. But
there was Lumineth as well. So Ryan Chamley had one of the most beautiful armies. He's been working on it. We've obviously had quite a lot of time this last year. You expect to see some pretty armies coming out, and his was certainly no exception. It was really, really nice. And he'd played quite a bit of practice with it, and it was a debuff list. So it had the Mountain, it had the Geminids, and it had the Shining Company, the combo of those three things together, making it impossible to kill his stuff. And he also had Teclis in there as well. So it was really cool.
I think, as we talk, me and LLV did this a couple of years ago, kind of hot prediction, so I'm just going to call this myself. We talked before the release of the Sinesh book, and interestingly, just before the release of the new Sinesh book, we called how there was a meteoric rise for Sinesh, which did obviously punch through with the new book. I do think that we're going to see more and more. I think what you're going to see from tournament results is you're going to see Lumineth only ever get a mid-range win percentage, you know, like 55, 50 kind of like win percentage, whole bunch of people playing them. But I think you're going to see a bunch of like high-end players. I think there's a massive skill ceiling on the Lumineth book. And as we see more games played, more people played, I think you're going to see a lot of Lumineth in the podiums. You'll see a lot in the mid tables as well, but I think you'll see a lot in the podiums as people really understand how to play that book well. And that's without new units coming in to change up the shape of their book from Broken Realms. So I think that they're going to be very strong. I don't know if you guys got any thoughts on that, but
all I would say is that looking at the Lumineth players that that played at the weekend in Hammer Time, you had some really top players who took the Lumineth, and it was the one player who's been playing it for the longest time. Matthew Golds has probably been playing Lumineth for about 6 months now on TTS, grinding, and he got the 3-0. So I think that does back up the idea that you do need to spend a lot of time with that book, understanding all of the synergistic options that you've got, and all the because it's all the resource management that you've got, especially with Sire. I'm not sure how you feel about Lumineth, Sam. It's sort of settled on Sire and Zytrek as being the most competitive sub factions.
Yeah, double Aether Quartz is ridiculous, isn't it? It's not dissimilar to the Archeon thing where it gives you utility, so you can double down, you can do things twice, spread it out. I think that obviously is going to be really strong, and I fully agree. Like, it's one of these armies where you need to know. And I think the best way to know is through practice. You need to know what the realistic output of your archers is and what the realistic survivability of your pikemen is and all. I don't know their real names.
That'll do. That's all you need to know.
Makes sense. You knew what I was saying, right? Like, I think, and choosing the right spells for Teclis and all of that sort of stuff. And I think that comes through practice and getting in your reps. So, yeah, I agree as well. I think if you don't know what you're doing, Lumineth are awful, because unless you're actually utilizing all of the tricks, the actual number of bodies you got on the board makes it quite tough to you know, go and score and hold objectives.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they're a good transverse to Seraphon. And no disrespect to anyone playing Seraphon, I have a Seraphon army, love my Seraphon army. They're a brilliant army, but you lose with Seraphon. You don't necessarily win with Seraphon. So really, you should win and then you lose, as opposed to with I think Lumineth. What I'm saying is you can face roll Seraphon. I'm saying if it was a computer game, you could you could smash your face in the keyboard and just kind of drag it across, yeah, and then you'd end up winning. Is what I'm trying to say, yeah. Like, right?
Wow.
Right.
Don't hold back, Rob. Don't sugarcoat it, brother. Just
that's all I think. Whereas, right, I think Lumineth, you got to play at least. I mean, Technado's like a by the by. Throw that in the bin, like as a conversation. But I think this is interesting. And again, massive shout out to Joel for pushing through a Khorne army to this top spot at the event. Was there any other notable things at the event at the weekend, Sam?
My mate Hayden, who probably is, in my humble opinion, is, you know, in the top two or three players in Victoria, bombed with Fangs of Sotek. So that was pretty notable.
How did you feel about that?
He was coming first overnight, and then he we'll go into this very quickly without making it into anything more than it needs to be. He was dominating on table one, round four, and they got timed out. And the TO is a lovely bloke and didn't necessarily want there to be any conflict, so called it a minor win to Hayden when he tabled his opponent in two turns. So I think that the right thing to do there, if you're his opponent, is to offer your hand and say, congrats, mate, you've got the major. But that ended up pushing him down a bracket, and then he copped a bad matchup in the last round and dropped down even further. So shout out to him. Couldn't even top 10 with Fangs. What a joke.
What a jerk.
Wow. Who needs enemies when you've got friends like that, eh? Bloody
yeah,
hell.
Perfect. Right, okay. So so great event, though. Are there any other Aussie events coming up soon that you're attending, at least?
Yeah, there's two coming up in a couple of weeks' time. So there's the Vic GT, which is being held up in Bendigo. I think there's a fair contingent of people going to that one. You had Pask on the show recently, and he was saying that he's gonna travel down from Canberra for that, so that's cool. And then there's the SAGT. So SAGT is a pretty prestigious event, and it has 50 tickets, and it sold out before it went live. So there was a little bit of controversy there. The link to the tickets never actually was put up, and I managed to snag one just through dumb luck. So I'll be going to that. And I'm going with Simon Hall, who you've had on, Chris Welfare, who you've had on, Liam Shadowhammer, Danny Paint.
Who's
so we've got
on?
A bit of a house. Oh, he's as well. Perfect.
Yeah.
So we've got a bit of a house for that one. We're all really looking forward to it.
And
it just every time someone posts a list in the little group chat we've got for the accommodation and whatever, the lists are progressively getting filthier and filthier and filthier. So I think it's going to be a no-holds-barred event. I'm really, really looking forward to that. That's hosted by Doom and Darkness, for anyone that follows the YouTubes.
Well, interestingly, I'm actually getting some shields from Doom and Darkness. That's a whole different conversation, not for the stat show, but I'll tell you that at the end. It's a weird story, but we're going to have them up in the arena, which is fun. The Australian scene seems so fun. I'm so jealous. And also playing real Warhammer. What a dream one day. But Owen, not talking about real Warhammer. Listen, TTS is still real Warhammer. What I meant is physical Warhammer, not Unreal.
Take
Warhammer.
It back, Rob. Take it back straight
no,
away, man.
No, I'm clarifying.
You spent all weekend with me talking about how wonderful the event was, and now you're shitting on it.
I'm not. I'm back, I promise.
I'm joking. I'm just
yeah, but talking about Cyber Warhammer. There we go. That makes it sound cool. Cyber Hammer 2021. It was a one day, three game event. So how did it go? Like, what did we end up with in that top eight?
So yeah, we settled on 80 players in the end, which was pretty wild.
Awesome.
So we had players as the usual, international field. So lots of UK based players. And then we had, I was thinking about the times that people were getting up. Some people were getting up at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning to play. And it's like, you know, just want to say thanks to all the like Canadians and the Americans and the Aussies. There's some tired minds, I'm sure, at the end of the day or the
but
start.
Accolade where accolades do. Largest single day, largest AOS event in the world, like as of 2021. And then largest single day event, obviously, as well. Because there are some 2-dayers that like, posting some big numbers. That's pretty impressive, right? Did we end up with 82, 83 players at the end of the day?
It was 83 at the start of the morning, and then had a few drops and a few bit of juggling around. I just want to say, I've told them in my Discord, but I want to say again, Colonel Cabbage and Dan Arnold, absolute legends, helping me out at the last minute. I would have never been able to wrangle that amount of people. So yeah, I had Cabbage played a couple of games, filling in, and Dan was helping out managing, because yeah, it was interesting going from like 40, 50 man events to 80. It was like more than double the amount of work. Like the amount of tables and information to process was pretty wild, but yeah, it was great. I mean, we had a really cool meta. We looked at obviously some lists and some list archetypes on Friday's show, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Even though that feels like that was last year.
time seems irrelevant.
At this stage. Yeah, so we had 80 players for that, and then we had 30 players yesterday for Titans, which was fun. Talking about Hammer Time 7, I'm not sure if you've got the document there.
I do.
Rob,
it's already up on the screen, brother.
Okay, amazing. So we had 80 players, and then because of the quantity, you can't really get a true winner with that many players and only three games. So I decided to just at the last minute we'll skim off the top eight and take them forward to a fun knockout tournament in a couple of weeks. And it was great, actually, the way it worked out. We ended up with eight players that finished on 3-0. So that cut was absolutely perfect. So it was only the unbeaten players that now go forward. So looking at the sort of lists and the sort of armies that went through, it does really show a big disparity in the strength of books. I mean, a lot can happen in a game of Warhammer. You can be winning and on a course for a 3-0, and then one priority roll or a crazy double six charge or something screws it. So I think all data has to be taken with a pinch of salt. Maybe not the size of the pinch of salt that GW are taking it, because
no.
But we do need to take it with a pinch all the same. But saying that, what we've got on the screen there are all the factions that were taken, the representation, And also the best result and the highest finished for those. And also then a little bit about the build. So, I mean, straight away, 7 out of the top 8 all came from Grand Alliance Order.
I think that's significant, right?
Yeah, I think there's no surprise there. Obviously, Broken Realms Marathi has done a lot for Deepkin and also for Daughters of Cain, you know, and obviously they've got their new book coming as well, which is going to probably give them a lift. Lumineth, super strong, you know, Seraphon, super strong. And then those cities builds. That was one of the big stories for the weekend, I think. Marcus Rock, who's in the chat there, going 3-0 with his Living City.
Excellent shout. 20 really, Sisters of the Watch, which blew my mind. 4 Fulminators, 30 Phoenix Guard, a Hurricane, 3-0, which is also a very un-French build as well. Like, we talk about like the different builds from different countries all the time. Australia, obviously, as janky as it can be and as weird and out there. France normally love a horde. Like, if you've ever played the French, they love a good horde. That's not really in... I mean, the 20 Sisters of the Watch, I guess, is a big pick. But they like, and the 30 Phoenix Guard, but normally it's like...
It's a horde character. Army, Rob.
Yeah, it's two. No, they're like two characters.
They want to go hard on hard on a horde.
They're like, do you have 200 bodies? Because I have 200 bodies. You're like, oh, sacre bleu. That's excellent play by Marcus there, right?
Yeah, it is quite bizarre, really, because for a country with such a strong gastronomic history and often seen as one of the greatest places to go for food in the world, they don't half love a bit of spam, do they? It's a mad one.
Also, we're getting some answer here. Marcus is actually only living in France and is Italian. So there we go. A more balanced diet and a more balanced list. That's making some sense. And that went 3-0. So that'll be through to the top 8. I wanted to ask Sam and mention this a little bit as well. When we did the list review show, a couple of things to ask about, but I'll start with the first one. You called it when we had you on the show. Before points were even out, the Kainite Shadow Stonkers, they were in pretty much all of the lists and included in some of those cities lists, doing really well in Daughters of Cain. You're happy with that call now and seeing them on
the tabletop? They're really good. They're really, really strong. Like, I was surprised they capped them at 2x the minimum unit size. I thought they'd let you take big hordes because they're super expensive to buy. Like, it makes sense to let you have a unit of 36 of them or whatever. But yeah, I think they're awesome. I've got myself 4 boxes on release and they're still all in shrink wrap. So that's good.
Marcus did have a unit in his cities build. So yeah, and they're popping up. I think they're basically, if they could, whoever can take them as allies, you are seeing them pop up here and there, because they're effectively just such a, they're a bit like people taking eel. I was taking eels in Sylvaneth for a bit, because it's just an incredibly strong war scroll, which is just going to, you know, it's going to do work wherever you plug it in, especially when you've got an army which doesn't have a teleport. It's like, okay, sweet. Well, I've got a teleport harrying unit. And I love that. Even if you've just got that hero left, like 3 attacks, I think it's 3s and 3s, rend 1d3 damage with all of the other buffs and stuff and 3 wounds. Like, that's like a sweet little hero that you can be bopping around. And how often have you won a game on turn 5? Because you can just teleport one model onto one objective somewhere on the other side of the board, right? It's strong play.
I think that's the conversation about teleports generally in Age of Sigmar. Actually, if we look at some of the builds, Cities of Sigmar Living List has got a teleport, obviously. That Big War list, I think, has got a teleport as well. Obviously, Seraphon have got a teleport. Deepkin, not a teleport, but great movement, and they could start off the board. And Marcus's point in the chat, and I think it's a one well made. Obviously, Sylvaneth also have a teleport, but Math Mallow, I'm so sorry, I don't mean you. or Sylvaneth. But you do keep your opponent honest on those objectives, right? You can't just run off an objective and be like, cool, I've got that, I'll leave it, it's safe. You always have to be conscious of, like, I feel whenever I play against teleports, I feel very hemmed in on the objectives. I'm always like, okay, if I leave here, I'm in an issue, which I guess is kind of one of the kind of counterpoints to the conversation about the rise in shooting. Does make sense why, you know, maybe one of those reasons that we see people take shooting a lot, it's obviously very good in its own right, is they feel it's something that they can do to not stop teleporting, but also engage against teleporting. If you've got a unit that's holding your objective at the same time shooting into your opponent's army, it's doing that two jobs. It's kind of nullifying teleporting a tad, but it's always going to be a conversation, right? And those Kainite Shadow Stonkers having the teleport kind of brings that conversation back round. I think it's always going to be something that's going to be really important in lists. And when it's given out as an allegiance ability for free, it's ridiculous.
I won't fanboy on Marcus's list too much, but there was one other little nice bit of tech I saw in there, which is he took a Knight Heralder, and I was thinking, okay, you don't really want to run and charge with your four Fulminators. But what I did see is that what he's doing with those, I'd imagine, and he can confirm, obviously the four Fulminators are his board edge deep strike. They use their Stormblast ability, then they need a hero in range to spend a CP to move, and then they've effectively got a much shorter charge. That's the cute thing you can do. So what he's done is he's got his Knight Heralder in there as the person, as the hero, which is going to pop the CP to allow them to move after they've shot. And then once they've charged in and hit something, if he then gets the turn roll, he's then got his Heralder in place to allow the Fulminators to retreat and then charge in again. Great. And then, mm-hmm. and then they get the flat three damage on the charge rather than the one. Yeah, there we go. So he's saying, so yeah, super sweet pick. I really like that. And yeah, he's got lots of interesting parts to the list. I'm sure that Marcus will, if we can get a link to the list or whatever, or the list will be available. But there's lots of moving parts, and he's got them to work really well.
I'll put it on the Honest Wargamer website, and then we'll be able to share it out. That's the easiest way to do it. That's why we paid for it. there's no other way to do it.
Other than that, Rob, I think that you'd probably have more insights in this than me, but the top Deepkin coming in third and obviously making it through then was the Fuethan list with
I really, really want to talk about this, because actually I don't know if anyone's been listening to the show for loads of years, but I've been standing for Alapexes forever as a long-time Alapex player. And if anyone just thinks that's a lie, how dare you? There's no way that I saw this at the weekend and thought, I'm definitely doing that. It's the best army ever.
Unless you're the opponent, it's fucking awful. Anyone that owns a Fire Slayer's army is just dumping them in the bin right now.
Well, actually, the interesting point about this list was, this is run by Sven, and we had it on the stream, so if you guys want to go back and watch this, it was game two on the stream. Fascinating to watch. Was that there were 10 Alapexes, so those are the sharks from my Death Deepkin in the list, but no nets, none of the net launchers, and it was all the harpoons, which was so important when you break down that list, because actually I'm just going to get the profile. It's three shots each, four shots each. I'm just going to make sure I get the profile right for you, which is pretty bonkers. So they move 14 base Alapexes, and the harpoon launchers 24 inch range, four shots apiece. So that army is doing, at 24 inches if it doesn't move, but 38 inches if it does move, 40 shots, threes, re-rolling because of the Futh 1 ability, re-rolling once to hit, threes, rend one, one damage. And that is on like a delivery vehicle of 80 wounds with a 4-up save in the Alapexes. And then when they go in for the fight, three attacks base, threes to hit, threes to win, rend two, two damage. So they can fight as well, and obviously just picking stuff off for turn three. But Archeon took 10 wounds from shooting before the Alapexes went in, like, which is pretty significant. That Ren 1 being massive, but it's just mind-blowing watching them in action. They're so fast, they're so tanky. Like, the rest of the list didn't have like lots of it had three lots of Ishlan for like screening, really, so defensive heals, and it had long strikes in, which was a cute pick with the counter charge eighth wings, which I thought was nice. I could have lived with it. I don't know. You'd have to ask Sven how much he thought it was vital in the list. I don't know if he's in the chat to say, but was amazing to see play, and I could absolutely see people running that list time and again. I mean, you could just drop down to eight of the sharks if you wanted to, you know, and take a, you know, try and fit yourself a Leviathan in or something as well. But it's that weight of shots which impressed me, and actually their war score changed a little bit, but I played Benjamin with this list on the, I don't even know if it was on Tabletop Simulator, it was on Tabletop Simulator, I don't even know if it was a breakfast battle last year, and he was doing the same thing. And again, you can just do the same trick, Volte, turn three, stack those command abilities on the sharks, they go from good to insane, and it's just a really good build. And I think it's something we're going to have to be conscious of, because it's a shooting army that's ultra fast, and there's not necessarily tons you can do against it. So really, really enjoyed that army, and I think that that's gonna. I think Marcus is saying in the chat he's drawn against it in the match next week. On the 20th of Feb, And he's like, yeah, cool, that's just going to take me off the board in a turn, which is pretty cool. So, yeah.
I'm not sure how many, if Sam saw any much Deepkin at the weekend, but that 3x3 Ishlayan, I think we're going to see that quite a bit, right? I think that's really, really strong at the moment, because they're 30 points cheaper than the Morsar, mm-hmm. and they're obviously offering quite you see them often with the Leviathan where they're on a 2-up save first turn, yeah. but even a 3-up save unrendable, and they've got, and your opponent has to shoot at them if they've got that shooting build, then I think 420 points to fill out your battle line and you know,
with
have
good
have
units.
Those fast
with good
yeah
units.
Yeah, they can still yeah. fight a bit as well, right?
Yeah, Ishlayan are brilliant. So yeah, I love that list. I thought that was great. So other notable lists, obviously, that went 3-0 as well, was the Daughters of Cain, which we talked about a little bit, and then also Ridge Hanna. He came in first with Seraphon. He came in that bracket as well, was with that Seraphon build.
Boring ass, whatever. He didn't actually play it. He had one of those birds that just taps the keys.
Come
he came
on.
Back 2.5 hours later. He's like, I've won. Yes, I've won. Oh shit! I forgot to deploy my camo skinks. So it didn't matter.
So are you saying that running Seraphon is the same as running a power plant in The Simpsons? Right. That's what Homer did. He had to. No, that's not true. They still have to be played a bit. I don't want to, because you've got three Seraphon in the top. But yeah, it's one of the books that has the most options, I would say, and one of the books that has the most low risk plays. I think that's true, right? If I was being a diplomat.
When it was released, the crew that were responsible for QAing at the testers, they all pat themselves on the back and said the internal balance is off the charts.
It is off the charts. It's just the whole thing is off the
Buy
charts.
Anything in the book and it's good. The internal balance is bellissimo.
So we talked about Matt as well, obviously doing really well with the Lumineth Realm Lords list. 50 Wardens, 20 Sentinels. Now, the allied in 2 Sharks. Now, there is a great conversation about just the level of debuffs. As Sam was talking about, the Lumineth list that was doing well and being practiced over in Australia was also a debuff list. The army really plays into that strength a lot. It's got great output as well, but there isn't overly ways to, like, tank up the output, let's say. You know, obviously you've got the spells for mortal wounds, and obviously, yes, of course, if you want to, you get reroll hits on things like Sentinels. But I think really the key part here is that it's a control army with good output rather than necessarily like a pure aggro output army. And I think that's one of the things that we're seeing here, because his inclusion of those 2 Sharks in the list, and those did have the net launchers. Don't forget, if you hit with the net launchers, then you are going to be able to make your opponent not able to pile in, which is pretty significant against a unit in those 50 Wardens that he's got. So those are the pikemen, and they've got a 3-inch range. So if you get real clever and fruity with it, of course you can get it so that you're in range to attack, but your opponent isn't in range to strike back, which is just the worst. That's brutal.
And the sequencing really is, you know if they've been netted because it happens in an earlier phase than your charge.
Yes.
So just with the 3 inches, that's great. Yeah, there's some really nasty things you could do with that.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, really, a key ally inclusion there. But yeah, really, really, really good. Obviously, Teclis in the list as well. And also that Umbral Spellport also. Not necessarily, don't know how much he went for the Technado, but it's always going to just do some good damage if he's got the option, right? And then the other list, obviously, to talk about is probably the hero. Marcus, big hero, but also Orcman. Orcman, with his MSU Big War build, a hero that Cat is. He is drawn up. I'm pretty certain that he's drawn up against Seraphon, the Fangs of Sotek list, in the next round. And then I think if he wins it, doesn't he have to play Seraphon again? His only path to victory is double Seraphon.
Let me see. You're testing my knowledge of my own format here, Rob, so bear with me. But yes, he's probably going to be going... I'll have to check. He's definitely got... Yeah, it's definitely Big War versus Seraphon in the first round. I'll have to come back to you on who's going to play after. I'm going to do a nice little path to victory kind of graphic at some point. But yes, I think generally, if you want to win the finals, you're probably going to have to beat Seraphon. I think that's the way it goes.
It looks like it, based on the numbers, if it's a 1-8 bracket, if it's like tennis or however they do it, yeah, it looks like he's got to go double Seraphon to win the event.
For the win.
Well, if anybody can, Orkman can.
Yeah, love and, it. Go Orkman.
Yeah, Orkman. Yeah, we had him on the stream for Hammer Time 6. And incredible plays, like absolutely topped it, like never missed a beat, always gave himself an out. He was doing, I mean, they were relying on teleports, but I think he just believed that they were going to happen, and they did. And I think that's one of those real big strengths there. So, like, he's, no offense to anyone else, I mean, obviously he's a long-time Alaplex player. I'm obviously rooting for Svend as well. But massive shout-out to Orkman, because I think it would be fun to see him push up that army. The other thing I wanted to ask you both about, which I thought was very interesting, is the most popular army in attendance was obviously Tzeentch. 11 lists, and none of them went 3-0. And I think that's pretty, usually it just because you've got a big spread of armies, normally someone will pick it, but they all got beat down. Did you have any thoughts on that, or no?
I'd like to have a look at what they lost to. I know Steve Follows was the top pick there with the host Arcanum Archeon Kairos. And we obviously did talk a lot about Tzeentch on Friday, thinking that they had game because you had all the usual suspects. You had an Eternal Conflagration. You had that absolutely disgusting 50 pinks in a multitudinous host with my a Gaunt Summoner. I would love to dig in and see what it all lost to. But I think... I don't know, perhaps the missions, maybe Blood and Glory. Maybe quite a lot of the Tzeentch players lost on Blood and Glory because they like, that covering and being able to score on all four was quite difficult, especially if they lose their squishy stuff.
So that actually brings up one of my favorite conversations from the weekend, actually. So Blood and Glory, if you guys don't know, you have to own all four objectives at the same time to win, and you automatically win. Math Mallow, who's in the chat with Sylvaneth, ended up with a massive win against the Lumineth list by what I'm going to call now the grief tactic, where he just bodied one objective and was like, I'm never leaving. Yeah, you have to go everything at me, and I could teleport out at any time, take one of the others, yeah, and you can't get me. And I thought, I would love that tactic. Like, it's a bit rough in a tournament setting, ultimately, but it's like a strong, Sam, I thought it might remind you of kind of ETC plays, where you're going in there aiming for a draw, right? Mm-hmm. Sat on an objective, not playing the game effectively. We don't see that much in Age of Sigmar. Normally at a 5-0 event, everyone's trying to win. But I thought the idea of a Blood and Glory mission in a team's event was fascinating, because then you give it to a guy and you say, just get that draw. Just sit on that objective and minor it out. I thought that was a cool tactic. It doesn't feel like a very interactive game, and there's loads of conversation about that. But from a kind of tactical perspective, I thought it was an interesting conversation. At least, you guys got any thoughts?
Yeah, I reckon that's really cool, and I think if deliberately playing for the draw,
you've got a shit armor, right? You've got Sylvaneth versus Lumineth. You're in a rough.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is the thing as well. You can just, if you know you're not going to win, you can just stop your opponent from podium, can't you? Or stop your opponent from going 3-0. I have been very distracted because there's a list there that says Vampire Lord on Zombie Dragon, Vordry, 10 Blood Knights, and 10 Hex Rays. I was like, oh my God, that's best in faction. You're kidding. And then I see, oh, it's 0-3. It's the only one in faction. That makes a lot more sense.
I have to give Adam actually a shout out now that you've made reference to that. This is Adam James.
It's such a cool list.
A lovely guy, and he hasn't been able to play any Warhammer for a long time. And then he rolled into some of the filthiest lists. Like, he played against Catacross and Nagash together in Mortis Praetorians, and was just messaging me going, some worst fucking game of Warhammer I've ever played. It was just what have I come back to? What's happened in the last 4 months? What's changed? So props to Adam, because I know he had a bit of a rough time on Saturday. But he is, he always plays Legion of Blood. He loves his vamps, so hopefully he's going to get some sweet new rules soon. Other things of note, I think Toggy with a Legion of Chaos Ascendant with 21 Kadai, I think he was close to going 3-0, I believe. Props to him. And it was interesting, all of those Knights of the Empty Throne, again, they fell short. They've been, doing a lot. I think Dave Kerr in your country has been doing quite well, Sam, with that Knights of the Empty Throne Plague Touch build. But again, they all fell fell short or going 2-1. For context, the mission pack was we played Star Strike, followed by Blood and Glory, followed by Total Conquest. So perhaps it did favour those faster teleporting armies, certainly on the first two missions, being able to react to where the star lands. Saying that, maybe, I don't know, outside of Change Host, how well do the Tzeentch builds do? You've got fast heroes that you can summon
in
behind.
Don't worry, Owen. By next week, we might have a stats breakdown for you. That'll be your answer. Yeah, super simple. Me and Ziggy will get that for you, and we'll be able to answer that question, which will be nice. But yeah, I think battle plans always, always change up, which is why I thought the Blood and Glory conversation was an interesting one, right? Total Conquest, mm-hmm. more of a standard battle plan. You know, and like we talked about, Mega Gargants will always do smashing on focal points. They're just like just bleeding points ultimately, which I think is super fun. And Starstrike, of course, is an interesting battle plan, and that does favor all sorts of stuff. And it's nice watching those games played out well as well. When some armies, I quite like Starstrike because it really neuters alpha armies, because they can alpha as much as they like, but they do nothing. So the armies that alpha and hold on, because really they're not, they don't know where they're holding on to in that first turn, because mm-hmm. there's no objectives yep. down. So it's interesting to see how those turns play out and what happens. I also am seeing, like, just a quick one on the Knights of the Empty Throne list. I think we're seeing a lot of players taking the first turn with their Knights of the Empty Throne list, which I think is interesting. I guess it's because they want the buffs up, right? They want the 2-up rerollable Varangard. You know, like, being played into a double is rough on any day of the week, so.
Yeah, especially with, like, you don't want to cop a double turn from KO. You don't. I mean, you saw it with Fabian and Ridge in game 3 on Saturday, that I think whilst he had the option to go after all those characters and get all his buffs up, I still think giving Seraphon the option of or the potential for a double is a path to sorrow. Yeah, it's a funny one. I think... I was surprised because I played Luke obviously recently in that Butchers tournament, and I was super surprised that he took that first turn with Plague Touched, got all his buffed up and went for that big YOLO charge. I don't know. It seems I don't know. Maybe it's the cautious player in me, but I would always look to maybe the Plague Touch doesn't really have screens, so they don't want to be alpha'd. Right, it doesn't really have many screens unless you use your Marauders as a screen, and then you're throwing away what they're really in the list to do.
Across the board. Yeah.
There's a lot of like, put the Varangard on the line, give them all the buffs in the world, and either threaten and move into the midboard, or people are going for that turn one teleport, which is it's a big balls play, it seems. I don't know if have you played against it yet, Sam, or have you seen it?
Yeah, I've played it a few times. I don't think it's that good. I think that's the problem. I just like when it does its thing. Yeah, when it does its thing and they buff the save and they pin you in and they string out and they tag a lot of units and they go off and score, it's really cool. But I feel like I played against it with my Death Riders, and I just, you know, conservatively did 59 mortals to that unit and they were dead.
That'll do. That will do.
But yeah, I think like.
Right, so
it's super strong, but yeah, overall, I think it is just a strong like a strong A or a strong B tier army.
Yeah, not the top end. I would agree with that. I think it lacks some elements. Not necessarily certain that's true of the Idolaters list. I'd just like everyone to point out. I think the Idolaters list in Plague Touched is pretty horrific. I'm just going to point that out there, but that's a different conversation for another day. Right, so Hammer Time 7, so on the 20th, the finals, top 8, they're going to go through and they're playing against each other. Is it okay if I read them out there?
Go for it, man. So, you can be the hype beast. Do it.
Oh, yeah. So the first one is we've got Orcman versus Seraphon. Now, this is important. We're obviously going to cover that game because we won Orcman to smash his way to victory. Like, I think maybe all of Age of Sigmar community is on Orcman's side at this point. No offense to any of the other players, but the double Seraphon just to get to the final is the win that we want. Then we got Matt Godelsbrough with his Lumineth Realm Lords, which is a game you're going to want to watch because he's been playing it a lot. He knows what he's doing. It's going to be super interesting to see. He's against Daughters of Cain, played by Audem, who plays really well. He's a super good player. He knows what he's doing. And he's got that Daughters of Cain list in Hagnar with Marathi. And Marathi, really good now. Like, really good since the update. So interesting to see what that book does to this coming weekend. Eidneth Deepkin, who I stand forever, of course, Sven with his 10 Alapexes against Marcus's Living City Cities of Sigmar list is going to be very interesting. And then I think then there's the Fangs of Sotek list. Trugdor is playing against another Seraphon list, Drakoth's Tale, because three of the top eight were Seraphon lists, right?
Three of the top five.
I would like to point out that Ridge, who won the tournament, whilst he's playing a filthy list, is an absolute gem, really lovely fella. And also all the Seraphon players are great. It's just the book that they're playing out of is absolute filth.
So, Ridge. Ridge did the ballsiest play in maybe the whole of Age of Sigmar. Never have I seen anyone cluster all of their support characters on the front line in front of his opponent in my life as bait. He was like, he ran the math in his head. He was crunching the numbers. He's like, 20 marauders teleporting to these guys. They're not going to kill any of them. And he called it. They're all alive there with one wound or a couple of wounds or whatever they were. And he nailed it. That was some intense bait. I was like, wow.
He's in the chat there just going, cover, baby. That's all he was But no, I think the real truth, Rob, we all know the real truth is that he forgot about the teleport, didn't he? He forgot about Mask of Darkness and then rolled out.
It depends how you spin the story. I'm spinning it the other way. It was a tactical bait play by a high skill Seraphon player. So that's what we're seeing. All right, cool. Has anyone got any shout outs or follow up points on any of this and or anything we talked about today? Either of you throwing you under the bus? No, you good?
No, I think Sam? So. I think.
Sam's got something.
Got a little one dayer coming up in a couple of weeks. My friend J Mac is running his first event at Good Games Greensboro. I don't think there's any tickets left, but just shout out to Good Game Greensboro.
Yeah. Big shout out. Any little. So one of the things that we are doing now, Ziggy might murder me, but we pretty much got a way for tournament reporting to happen. It's a bit crunchy right now. You're going to have to fill in a spreadsheet. Just fucking do the That's work fun. For us. But we do have ways now. So if you do have a tournament coming up, we'll be able to send you a sheet and you fill it in. And then that will give us all of the don't get pissy about it data. Yeah, that's what it will give us. So it will crunch out some numbers. So if you guys are running a tournament somewhere in the world and you do want that tournament data to come up, because it will be something we start actually featuring over the next few weeks, then please do reach out to us and ask us for one of those. We do have a Discord server and you can obviously reach me on Twitter or whatever. And if I don't reply, just tweet me and just be like, you can't fucking answer this. And I'm like, sweet, no problem. I got you, buddies. That would be super sweet, because it would be so good to get all of this data collected together and then actually look at some numbers. I think one of the things that's most interesting to me is how different armies do on different battle plans. I think that's fascinating. I think that'll really change the shape of some stuff. So anyway, great. Sam and Owen, thanks so much for being on the show, especially after long weekends.
Could I just put? I got one more thing to talk about.
Yeah, go on.
Very quickly, if that's okay. Yeah, it was just. I think that even though this is very much we're focused more on competitive data and information, I just want to shout out all the people that took part in Sunday's event. So Titans of Gur, much hilarity was had. Everyone had to take a mega gargant. I'd probably say that it proved to be the least efficient part of everybody's lists, but we'll gloss over that because we all had a great time. Friends were made. Alliances were forged. Lots and lots of models were named. Some great stories. I just wanted to make sure that all the players that attended got the props they deserved, because it was a great end to the weekend. That was taken out. It's fine. As Sam's background says, it's fine, because Seraphon also won my narrative event. there you go. It's fine. Tavi Gain, who is a lovely fella, he created an absolutely disgusting list with it. He didn't have a mega gargant. He had a giant skink called Skinkzilla. But he was like 27 points clear of any other player with his wonderful list, including loads of Seraphon stuff that you wouldn't normally see, like Engine of the Gods and Ripperdactyls and stuff. But it's still, I reckon he could take that to a normal event and do really well with it, even with a 500 point Mega Gargant tax, it was still super strong. So Tavi took it out. Favorite opponent was Chris Bowden, who I've never met him, but every time I have a conversation with him, he's a lovely fella. So I'm not surprised that Chris won favorite opponent. Yucca won the Darren Watson List Award with an amazing Gloomspike Gits list, which was great. Just overall, there was just some really good vibes. Noah Singh, he went from bottom of the pack, and then he just absolutely rinsed it in his last game. And he went from 0 to 73 points and came 5th out of 30 people with a Mega Gargant just going absolutely ham in his last game. So it was a really fun tournament, and I'm sure all the players that took part. I got lots of nice feedback, and we're going to do something fun again in the future. So, there's room on this show for a little bit of narrative fun. Robin, I think you had a good
actually,
time.
We're actually only a narrative show now. Actually, just like to point out, 10 Sharks, narrative, Marathi, narrative. They're all narrative. All right, let's head. Listen, Twitch chat, you're all brilliant. Thanks for listening to the show. Sam and Owen, I love you both loads. Thanks for being on. Appreciate it. We'll see you guys soon. Everyone have a nice day. Don't forget to join us tonight for the Age of Sigmar show. We'll see you guys later. Have a nice day.